You're listening to Screen Heroes on the Heroes Podcast Network.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Screen Heroes. I am your weekly host, Derek, and I've got my two lovely co-hosts with me, Ryan.
Hi.
And Ray.
Hello.
And we are here this week to talk about the classic 1998 film Small Soldiers, which is a childhood favorite of mine. But before we do that, of course, it is our news segment, so the latest going on in the world of entertainment. Ray, where should we start? What do you want to go with?
Oh, well, I just recently found out that Guillermo del Toro is making a Pinocchio film for Netflix. Not necklace, Netflix. And I had no clue this was even happening or that production had already started on it a while ago before COVID. And Ewan McGregor is set to play Jiminy Cricket.
Is this now your most anticipated movie of the next 5 years, Rachel?
Well, considering it might be the only one that comes out, yes.
That's not true. Tenet's going to come out.
We think so at some point.
I mean, it did get delayed again.
Did it? Yeah. Okay.
In fact, the only movie that hasn't been delayed in 2020 is Bill and Ted Face the Music. It actually got moved up a week.
All right.
So, for what that's worth. I mean, Del Toro does some cool stuff. I'm sure it'll be a creepier take on Pinocchio than what we're used to seeing.
For sure. Which I think is rather fitting. It is a very creepy fairy tale when you think about it. Like, it ends with a bunch of little boys getting, you know, trafficked. And turned into donkeys.
Yeah, it's creepy. I mean, I haven't seen the cartoon in a really long time, so I don't really remember it super well, but it's certainly creepy.
Yeah.
Ryan, any opinions?
I mean, I didn't even remember that part of Pinocchio because it's been so long since I've seen it. So, I mean, I'm fair sure enough. I remembered it when you brought it up that there was like kids turning into goats, but that's all I mean, I don't even remember the circumstances surrounding it.
That's fair. Well, down that line of conversation, so Regal Theaters has announced that they are officially reopening starting on July 10th. They're the first major chain in the United States to announce the official reopening date, which is interesting. I'm not sure exactly what they're going to play. I know that when Warner Brothers pushed Tenet out, they decided to re-release Inception for its 10th anniversary. And there's rumors it's going to have looks at Tenet as well as other WB productions. What do you guys think? Are you going to be ready to go back to the theater in July?
No.
Okay, Ryan, your take.
Probably. I mean, I just by my job, I'm pretty at risk anyway. And so I feel like if I'm going to be exposed, it's more likely going to happen at work than it is at a movie theater. But, you know, I can definitely understand somebody that doesn't feel up to it. And I, you know, don't judge those people. It's just I've already been exposed so much. It's kind of numb at this point.
Yeah, that's a difficult situation, of course. They're working on the procedures and things like that for how it's going to work. Apparently, they're going to have half capacity for all of the screen rooms and health screenings and temperature checks for their employees. And, they're going to have to keep people spread out and things like that. You won't be able to sit next to somebody. Unless I assume if you're buying the ticket with the person, they'll allow that. I mean, it doesn't go into that kind of detail, but so that's it. Regal's opening back up, which I imagine Cinemark and AMC and such are not going to be far behind.
Yeah, you're probably right about that.
Good point.
The other kind of major news in the movie standpoint is the Oscars. So the Academy Awards has been pushed It's basically been delayed 2 months. So it is now going to take place on April 25th, 2021. And because of that, they're actually extending the window of eligibility through the end of February 2021. So whereas October 31st is usually the cutoff for that year's Oscars, now it's the end of February. So, you know, that'll give movies a little more room to release delayed and give Sonic the Hedgehog and Bad Boys for Life some extra competition.
I don't think those are the real front runners at this point, though, if I'm being honest. I think Velocipaster pretty much has everything in the bag.
It's very true.
Well, yeah, yeah. I mean, we've only had one animated movie, right? So I guess Onward wins Best Animated Picture.
Justice League Apocalypse War. Justice League Dark Apocalypse yeah. War, sorry.
And I mean, Pixar is supposed to release Soul, but I don't know when that's happening anymore. I kind of stopped paying attention to release dates until they're a little more settled.
That makes
sense. That's probably a good plan.
So I'm going to let Ryan take the lead on this next story because he specifically wanted to talk about it. And it has to do with Stephen Amell.
Yep. He's got a neighbor that he's complained about a bunch of times on social media for various things. I don't know all the specifics, but earlier this week or late last week, he posted a photo on Instagram of a pile of turds on his roof. And he's claiming that his neighbor climbed up on it. Well, that somehow his neighbor put poop up on his roof, what he thinks is human feces. And how it happened is anybody's guess. I mean, did the neighbor climb onto the roof and squat and take a dump right there on the shingles? Or did the neighbor maybe scoop it out of the toilet and sling it up onto the roof? Or did they shit in their own backyard and then throw it up on the roof? Or maybe their dog and they thought it looked human-like, so they scooped up some dog crap and threw it on the roof? There's a lot of possibilities on how the poop got there is what I'm getting at. And we really don't have any definitive evidence as to what happened. I'm beginning to call this Arrow Poop Gate 2020. So we're going to get shirts made. So watch that in our for a merch shop.
Yes. But,
yeah, it's a serious, serious deal.
So Stephen Amell posted a photo of it on his Twitter, and based on that, it doesn't look like it was like thrown up there.
It looks like it was
gently placed.
I mean, if I had to pick one of my favorite of the things that I said, it would be that the neighbor went up onto the roof and dropped trowel and dookied right onto his roof. Because if you're gonna like say fuck you to somebody, that's how you don't throw the poop up there. You go up there and drop it right onto their roof. You give them that coiled snake right there and no regrets. So no regrets. I'm hoping that's how it happened, but it's hard to say really, but it doesn't look like, I mean, I'm not a CSI scientist, but I do watch a lot of CSI and I'm pretty sure that was not thrown up there. Just, that's my expert opinion.
Ray's been quiet. Any thoughts?
She loves this.
This is pretty funny for me, and I feel bad for Stephen Amell. I would really hate that. Like, how do you notice that? I don't pay attention to our roof too often, so I'm not
good,
quite sure.
Thank goodness for that. Right. I left a little present up there for you, so.
Apparently, yeah. I wouldn't, like, see it for days, but anyway, I...
Now, I want to be fair with this because Stephen Amell has recently been on Michael Rosenbaum's podcast, and he said that he's a tough guy to get along with on set, in real life. My personal experience, because I'm pretty close with Stephen, I did meet him once at a con and got a picture taken, and he complimented a bow I made. So we're basically best friends, but I would not say that he is hard to get along with. But he claims he's hard to get along with, so, you know... The post he made that Derek was referencing, he mentioned that his wife was the one that had been dealing with this lady, so maybe his wife is equally as hard to deal with as he is. I don't know. I'm just saying that I can think of probably at least 20 different scenarios where I would go take a shit on my neighbor's roof. So.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That's just off the top of my head. I could probably come up with more.
All right. Fair enough. Well, keeping in line with the DC topic that we're currently on, there's been a lot of rumors surrounding the Batman, which is Robert Pattinson's Batman film. It's rumored to be start back up production in early July, July 6th. And there's a lot of rumors. So, guys, is there anything in particular that jumped out at you that you want to talk about?
Well, I mean, for me, the exciting part is the description of the fight scene in the Iceberg Lounge, which sounds like, I mean, in my head, it rivals the warehouse fight scene from BVS, and that was probably the best part of that movie. So, you know, that makes me really excited. It's essentially described as a fight scene that involves a lot of thugs and a bunch of Batman gadgets, and yeah, so that sounds really neat.
They're called
and the Iceberg Lounge is pretty iconic. Do what?
Yes, they're called Bat Gadgets. Just Bat
Gadgets. My mistake. Sorry.
Yeah. Ray, what about you?
Oh, there's a lot of cool stuff in there. First of all, it's really fun to see them go balls to the wall with villains, if that is indeed the truth. If I counted correctly, there are 5 villains mentioned. I'm assuming that Catwoman will play more of an anti-hero or just like a simple foil for him, but at the same time the Firefly, Mad Hatter, and then Penguin and Riddler sound really cool. I expressed today in our private chat that I'm a little upset they're changing Mad Hatter around. So the rumor is he's going to be a drug dealer and not a pedophile, which will be a little disjointing for me considering that's his storyline. Like even in Batman the Animated Series, they didn't
flat. And in Gotham.
Yeah, and in Gotham, it's a little weird for me. Drug dealing is not nearly as bad, in my opinion, as pedophilia, and I think this will lead to people liking the character more, which makes it just a little odd for me. You know, I compared it to people who enjoy Nazi characters. You know, it's just weird. You're not supposed to.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I'm a little concerned about the volume of villains just because historically the more villains there are in a superhero film, the more of a mess it tends to be. Especially when it's, you know, a solo kind of flick and not some big team up.
Once you hit 4, you are required by law to do nipples on your bat suit.
That's actually true.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, so I'm a little concerned about that. I don't know why. And look, it may be great, but I don't know why a Batman movie needs to have, like, a massive rogues gallery of villains when...
Well, the rumor is that they're basing it on The Long Halloween, which has a very large rogues gallery of villains. So, I mean, it makes sense. And that story obviously was written, so you can't really compare it to what a movie would be. But the villains in that did not have a lot of character development. You know, it was they basically were just getting questioned, and then that was it. And I think if they focus on the Riddler and Penguin, like the rumors say, I think it'll still be fine. They'll just be secondary characters and not really villains, because they're only villains in the larger sense of the universe, not necessarily in this particular movie, if that makes sense.
It does. And if that ends up being the case, then that's great. You know, people know I'm a DC fanboy, so I want this to be good. I'm just a little nervous.
I'd really enjoy that. I think a huge issue with the Batman movies previously has been the large disconnect. Like, oh, he fought this one villain this one time in this one movie, and then never again. And, I mean, Nolan's trilogy is just as guilty as the Tim Burton Joel Schumacher matchup, where, you know, stuff happens but we just forget that those guys ever existed. The only one to kind of survive that was Scarecrow, and his cameos got more and more comical as mm-hmm. we went on. And so playing the long game with these villains is exactly what we love about the Rogues Gallery. Is we like seeing them show up in small bits. We like seeing them be their own thing, their own threat. So if that's what they're doing, I'm going to be very happy. If it's just like a mass of confusion, then meh, we've seen that.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Multiple times. Yep. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I get excited about reading those leaks is the purple potential for the purple Catwoman suit.
Oh, yeah.
That would be amazing.
That would be very cool. Yeah, I agree.
So did these leaks get you guys more excited for the movie, or stay the same, or less excited for the movie?
No, I'm pretty excited. The only thing that just makes me a little sad is, you know, the lack of women involved, but these are just leaks. They're not confirmation, and it's also not a guarantee. So we'll see how it goes.
Well, Zoe Kravitz, strong actress. I think that hopefully mm-hmm. she'll be enough of a female influence that we won't feel the loss throughout the rest of the movie. I hope, but we'll see, I guess.
I'm pretty even on it. I'm looking forward to the movie because I like Batman, you know, and I want to see more Batman. But kind of the problem that Spider-Man has for me is that like those two characters just keep getting reboots and new versions and new movies over and over again. And you know, I think I would just like to see some other characters get the spotlight. And you know, until I actually get to see, you know, Robert Pattinson in the suit in some type of video sequence, you know, I'm just gonna try and temper expectations is all.
That's fair.
All right. Well, the last piece of news that I have surrounds San Diego Comic-Con, which is officially moving to a virtual event called Comic-Con at Home, all one word with a dash between comic and con. It will kick off on Wednesday, July 22nd. It will be free for people to experience. It'll include a lot of the major stuff that it has been known for, like panels and presentations, that type of thing. And they're even adding in gaming competitions, which is really great. So there's going to be a printable badge that you can have for yourself if you want to, you know, do that kind of thing. And everyone gets to go, which I'm excited about because this is the first time I'll actually be able to attend San Diego.
Probably the only time in our lives.
Right.
You know, which is kind of funny. So I'm happy about it personally. I think it was a smart move for them to do this. I think it took a lot of guts to do it. I don't think it's an easy undertaking what they have promised to deliver here. But I'm looking forward to it. What about you guys?
Yeah. I mean, if they announce some cool panels, then I guess I'll probably tune in for those. But other than that, it's fine. I mean, I'm going to be doing the same thing I do every San Diego and just troll the toy sites for the exclusives and, you know, mm-hmm. grab them that way.
I truly appreciate that they're trying. You know, this is one of the few cons that feels sad about missing, because every year we do a San Diego news thing, and this year there's not going to be any news. Like, some things will be announced, but it's not going to be as intense or as fun as we want.
Yeah, and Warner Brothers has basically said that DC Entertainment's not going to be there. They're going to do their own thing. So we'll have to wait and see what that's all about. Mm-hmm. All right. Any other news that you guys would like to cover?
No.
I think we got it all?
Yeah. Very all good. Right.
Then we will take a short break, and when we come back, we will be talking about the 1998 film Small Soldiers. All right, we are back to talk Small Soldiers. So, this film came out July 10th, 1998, rated PG-13, and stars a interesting collection of people, including Kirsten Dunst, Dennis Leary, the voice of Tommy Lee Jones, and many others. The movie came in at a $40 million budget, and grossed a grand total of $71.7 million worldwide, which is not amazing. Not a flop, but definitely not, I'm sure,
definitely
what they were.
Definitely a failure.
Yeah, not what they were hoping for, I would imagine. So, you know, it's got a 6.2 on IMDb, which is also not great. But let's, real quick, have you guys had all seen it before we did it for the podcast, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. And would you say that after your rewatch here, well, when was the last time you had seen it before this?
It's been a while. Probably, yeah, I would guess maybe 2002, 2001, somewhere in there.
Definitely over 10 years for me.
Yeah, I'd probably say sometime around when Ryan was saying I had it on VHS. So that's what I was watching it on last. And we rented it through Amazon this time around. But okay, so just before we dive into the details, is your now that you've watched it, do you think it held up to what you remember? Better, worse, the same?
No, it definitely held up. The animation is pretty seamless. Like, there were only a couple parts that drew me out, which says a lot about what tech they were using back in the day. You could tell it was a really great mix of practical and animation. And then also just the storyline is just as fun. I thought maybe I enjoyed it as a kid because, you know, I'm young and dumb and everything. But no, it was wonderful. It was super enjoyable. And the lines were just as funny. It's a damn shame that since it's a DreamWorks picture, it was never spun off into a cartoon or something.
It was like the sixth DreamWorks picture that they ever did or something. Like, it was a pretty early DreamWorks picture, which DreamWorks was Steven Spielberg's thing. So that was, you know, a pretty big deal. I'd say, yeah, I mean, I probably enjoyed it the same amount. There are certainly things that my perspective is a lot different now than it was then. So, you know, it came across as a lot darker, kind of like Surf Ninjas did when we watched that. It came across as a lot darker as a adult than it does as a kid. Mm-hmm. But overall, yeah, I mean, I was impressed with very, very impressed with how well everything held up. Like Rachel was saying, there was probably less than a handful of times when I was like, wow, all right. And even those times I was not like, this is really bad. I was like, okay, I can tell now that something's going on, but it wasn't horrible. I mean, I enjoyed it just as much. I'm happy I watched it again.
Yeah, same. I definitely found it funnier than I remembered it being. Like, I remember enjoying it, but not in like a humorous way. I just remember enjoying like the action figures and the action, but I actually found it pretty funny this time around. There's definitely some tonal stuff that's really dark. Just kind of some commentary on some serious issues that I assume they were making on purpose at the time. But yeah, I mean, visually, this movie is 22 years old. And it still looks really good. It's really kind of surprising when you think about what animated movies looked like at the time technologically and what lots of kids' movies were looking like. I guess this is your spoiler warning for 1998's Small Soldiers. But one thing that really caught me off guard was a few things that just seemed like ripoffs of Toy Story. Like particular moments. Did you guys get any of that?
Yeah, there's definite themes that are similar to Toy Story. I think they took the idea of Toy Story to the next level because, I mean, Toy Story is pretty dark too at times.
Right? It kind of feels like this is an adult version of Toy Story. Mm-hmm. But the scene that kind of sealed that for me was when Alan puts Archer strapped to a rocket. And launches them, and like that's just like, I mean, yeah, that's what happens to Woody, right? Or Buzz, excuse me. And so I just thought that was really funny, and maybe it's totally coincidental, and it's just because they're focused on toys that I made that connection. But this definitely seemed like a darker take on that idea of what if your toys were alive.
Yep.
Yeah, this movie, it seemed like it was two movies in one. When I watching it as an adult, like it seemed like it was a like dark, violent adult movie on the inside, but then they wrapped it in a child-friendly shell. And I actually went and read about it, and apparently they, when they originally developed the movie, the director said in an interview in 2008, said he was told to make an edgy picture for teenagers, but when the sponsor tie-ins came in, the new mandate was to soften it up as a kiddie movie. Too late, as it turned out, and there are elements of both approaches in there. So you can definitely see that as an adult. I just thought that was interesting that even the director has kind of acknowledged that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point. Like, at the very tail end of the movie, what's his face? I can't remember the guy's name, but the president of the company says that, you know, it's a shame that would have made a good commercial. And I thought, well, yeah, the whole movie is a commercial for, like, the entire toy line that they ended up having, because there were like two or three different tiers of quality for the action figures and all these play sets and stuff. And so, I mean, yeah, like, I wanted like all of these figures. I don't think there was a single one I didn't want to have and just play out like my own battles. But I'm also the kind of person who would have had the Gorgonites win most of the time. So
I think we all would have, because we're not sadists.
True. Oh, well, okay then. All right. That's a hard stance here on Screen Heroes.
Come on. Hot take.
Gorgonites should win.
We all enjoyed the Gorgonites more than we did the Commandos.
Yeah.
Here's something that blew my mind, though. So as a kid, I loved Archer. Mm-hmm. I thought he was the coolest, and the voice was amazing for Archer. Turns out it's Frank Langella, and I never knew that. For those of you who don't know, Skeletor, Frank Langella. Yeah, I was like, oh my gosh, this all makes so much sense now. It's all full circle. But yeah, that, I mean, Archer was the best voice casting in the whole movie, if you ask me. I mean, he was perfect.
I agree. Yeah,
there's a lot of just crazy casting in here. You know, people from the Dirty Dozen and Spinal Tap. You have Christina Ricci and Sarah Michelle Gellar are voicing the dolls.
Gwendy or whatever they are.
Yeah, the Gwendys. Yeah. You know, like it's all over the place. And then you have Tommy Lee Jones playing Chip. And so like the voice cast is actually a lot more interesting than the human cast in the movie.
It's all interesting. If you ask me, when I was watching this with my girlfriend and she had never seen it before. Hmm. So seeing all these people come up, you kind of realize how stacked the cast really is. Like there was a lot of really good talent with this movie. And I didn't know that really, or I had forgotten most of it until looking back at it now. And back then, maybe a lot of them were not big names. So the fact that now a lot of them turned out to be bigger names is pretty interesting.
Well, I mean, you know, Phil Hartman, of course. You know, he was a big name.
I don't think he was a question whether he was a big name at that time or not.
Well, at the time, like a lot of those people were associated with Saturday Night Live. Jay Moore, Dennis Leary, and Phil Hartman, and of course the cameo by Sherry O'Terry. Sherry O'Terry was the only one who was actually working at Saturday Night Live at the time. Dennis Leary was a frequent host, and Jay Moore was a brief cast member, but of course Phil Hartman was on there for 9 years. So Joe Dante like took some of the best comedic talent of the 90s and put him in there.
I do feel like Phil Hartman was a little wasted in this role. He was he played a similar role in Jingle All the Way.
Yeah.
And I thought it was handled a lot better in Jingle All the Way than it was in this movie. But you know, it's kind of dickhead neighbor, right? Like that's the role he got pigeonholed into for a few movies, but Jingle All the Way, I think he did a better job.
No, that's a really good comparison, and it's even more niche than like Jerk Neighbor. It's also like super know-it-all.
Yeah, know-it-all, like right? Really good at everything, Jerk Neighbor.
Right. And I immediately thought that. I was like, oh man, this is just like that Jingle All the Way role. And I don't know, maybe it's just because he gets lost in all the ridiculousness that's going on around him most of the time.
It could be.
You know, because Jingle All the Way is a little bit more of a family story, of a character story, whereas this is, I mean, at the end of the day, is really focused on the toys.
Yeah, absolutely. The human characters are secondary to all the toys.
Right.
And like, maybe that was, like, a huge problem. Maybe they should have gone with a few more nobodies.
Hmm.
humans, not as the voices, of course.
The guy who plays Alan, Gregory Smith, I mean, I don't really recognize him. Was he from anything?
He did a few other kids movies, a few other movies as a kid. And then he went on to have a fairly successful career in Everwood.
Ah.
And he's done a lot of indie films since.
Gotcha, yeah. So, I mean, the main lead wasn't like a huge star at the time. And Kirsten Dunst was kind of up and coming. She'd already done Jumanji, you know. Well,
she got top billing, she and Dennis Leary.
Mm-hmm. Well, she was only, 2 years away from filming Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
She looks so much younger in this movie, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, she looked more like her Jumanji character than she did her Spider-Man character. So
the jump from 16 to 18 was a big difference for her, just like in her face.
Yeah.
But what year was Jumanji, just for comparison's sake?
Was she really 18 when she started filming Spider-Man?
Well, she was 16. She would have been 16 in 1998. I looked it up because I was curious how close in age the kids actually were in real life compared to the characters. And so she would have been 16 when Small Soldiers premiered. And since Spider-Man came out in what was it? Was it 01?
Yeah.
Sure.
So I assume she was filming in 2000.
Yeah, probably.
Have you started checking all these kids' actors' age ever since Surf Ninjas, because we got lied to in that one? We got made to believe that this guy's 14 years old when in reality he's like 24.
And Rob Schneider's like 82 filming this.
But he's supposed to be 16 years old. Okay. So I did notice that we've never talked about Rob Schneider on this show. And then we had two episodes featuring Rob Schneider. Well, we never talked really about Dennis Leary, and now we've had Dennis Leary in two episodes. So I'm wondering what other character from this movie is going to be in the next review we do.
Oh, it's got to be David Cross, right? Because like he has done so much stuff. Yeah. He is in the background of a million movies. Like, it's got to be him.
Probably.
All right, so for those doing the math at home, Jumanji came out in 1995 and Spider-Man came out in 2002, not 2001. So this was like right in the middle. So 95, 98, 2002. There you go. But yeah, I started checking like kid actors who are supposed to be playing kids. I've started checking their ages the last few years because I've just started to realize how ridiculous a lot of like high school TV shows are cast.
Yeah.
You know, and I didn't really care.
CW was pretty notorious for that.
Right, exactly. That's a prime example.
Happened our whole life. All of the Saved by the Bell shows, as like the sequel, the spinoff, the college years, and all the ripoffs as well. They were all like in their 30s.
Mm-hmm. And so that's why like I do like now when I do see where people were cast appropriately. You know, right. So Alan and Christy are 15 and 16 approximately. And so that works. You know, they're not 25 or whatever.
Right.
So anyway.
Kids that actually look like kids.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So let's talk about the premise of the movie. Right. So the idea is, of course, for those who don't know, a giant tech conglomerate that has military contracts buys out a toy company, and one of the designers pitches the Gorgonites, who are these peaceful alien type beings, and the other guy, who's the more jerk guy, is pitching these like super soldiers, these military guys. And of course the head of the company likes the military guys. And so it gives them basically unlimited access to build them and make them like really real the way it is in the commercial. And I still appreciate that concept of like, let's have the toy actually do what we show that it does. I'm on board with that. And so they put military grade chips in the bodies of these action figures, and they're highly intelligent. And then the soldiers, the commandos, start trying to kill the Gorgonites.
They explain it later. It's like a neural learning network in the chips. So like they can constantly learn about the things that are happening around them and adapt to it, but they still have their one primary directive.
Mm-hmm.
So
exactly. And they know what they are, right? They understand that they're mechanical and they're small and that kind of thing. And so, yeah, so from that premise, guys, how does that hold up over the years? Do you think that that basic premise still works?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's been done, not in the exact same way. It's been done several times, though, and, you know, it's been pretty successful. So, I mean, this is probably one of the lesser on the successful scale in terms of that premise. But, yeah, I think it's it works just fine. And, I mean, the talent behind it, of course, is going to work. They knew they had a slam dunk with it, but then it wasn't a slam dunk, so...
Yeah, I mean, financially, it's certainly rough, right? And that's a difficult thing for a movie like this. But I mean, I personally think the premise holds up pretty well, right? The idea that a much larger company that does maybe some controversial things trying to buy out more consumer-friendly companies to put on a smiling face. I mean, that's pretty believable to me.
Mm-hmm. You know? Well, like, it wasn't until my first or second year in college when I realized that most of the television companies, most oil companies, most this, most that, they're all owned by like five companies in the whole world. And it was so just disheartening. So I completely believe it. This,
yeah.
I could see this happening, you know, tomorrow.
And, you know, we talk about how whether or not this movie was successful, and I do like putting things in context. So this movie opened up against Lethal Weapon 4 and Madeline. Those were the three new movies.
Lethal Weapon 4 was the one with Jet Li, right?
Yes.
Yes.
I did see that in theaters.
And in theaters already at the time was Armageddon, only in its second week, and Dr. Dolittle in its third week, and Mulan in its fourth week. So you had a pretty stacked theater with a lot of kids-friendly movies, a lot of adult-friendly movies, and some stuff in between. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of competition. I mean, even going down the list, the Truman Show was still in theaters at the time. And so I think that that's just bad luck, maybe. Bad timing.
Yeah. Ruben,
partially.
Absolutely. You know? I didn't see this in theaters. I didn't catch it until, like, HBO.
Mm. Yeah, no, I was in the theaters. I did see it, and I got the big VHS. You know, like some of the movies came in oversized boxes for whatever reason, and that's what I got when it released at home. So, all right, so let's talk about the action figures themselves, because that's obviously the main focus of the movie. Who do you like? Who do you maybe not like? What do you think of the designs? Go.
I do want to give a shout out to Stan Winston Studios, who did the practical effects. If you've ever seen a movie with really good practical effects, it's really likely that it was probably Stan Winston Studios, because their stuff is always the best. And so at the beginning of the movie, when it popped up, it says with Stan Winston, it's like, all right, I mean, this is going to hold up for sure. And it did. All the practical stuff did for sure. But mm-hmm. I mean, the amount of mechanical work that went into having a toy that could do the things that they were making it do on such a small scale, very impressive. But character wise, I mean, the Gorgonites are all cool, right? Like, we all like lovable monsters. Even like the one that was supposed to be scary, the Frankenstein one or whatever, was still pretty cool. Ernest Borgnine was Slam Fist. It's like, what? Right? I didn't realize that. But yeah, Chip Hazard was cool. And I mean, the Commandos were cool too. It's just, you know, you're not supposed to root for them. So, but as somebody that grew up in the 80s with like their idols being testosterone fueled muscle men and, you know, pure action stars, the Commandos had their own appeal too.
Ray, what about you?
Yeah, so definitely favored the Gorgonites, and I think it's just because they all looked different. You know, there is no one color to them or scheme or anything, and I understand why, but it was just more appealing to me as a kid. Slam Fist was my favorite, other than Archer, of course. I confessed to Derek during the movie that as a kid, I had always found Archer a little attractive because of the abs and everything. And
the abs and that voice. I mean, geez.
Yeah, right?
Like seductive.
It's calm. And he never raises his voice.
No,
and he's intelligent. He's... Like, yeah, he is the gentle warrior, and I love him. The Commando Elite, they're fun. They look like every soldier I've ever seen in a Commando movie. Like, as soon as I saw them again this time, I was like, these guys are straight out of the Predator movie.
Yeah, they were supposed to be like stereotypical, you know, and you could identify what each one was by the way, like what their role was by the way they looked. So
absolutely. And I loved everything about that. I loved how cliche they were. You know, the monsters, the Gorgonites got to be unique and a bit fleshed out, and they could be, you know, plays on the universal monsters, but the Commandos were clearly parodies of every like war film, every action film that we saw, every Rambo, and it was just a lot of fun. So
I'm with you there. I do appreciate that even though the Commandos were supposed to, you know, obviously be troops that looked similar, they still had unique facial designs and body designs, and they at least I think they did the best they could to differentiate them within like that confined structure of what they were supposed to be.
I mean, just looking at them, like if I just saw a picture of each one, I could tell you exactly what each of their roles were in the unit, which means that it was successful character design, you know.
Yeah, and I think that's huge, right? Because we're being introduced to a lot of characters very quickly, who some of them don't get a ton of screen time, and so being able to recognize them at just a glance is important. I think, you know, yeah, it's obviously the safe answer to say Archer is your favorite. I love Archer. I've always wanted that action figure. But I really like Insaniac because of the puns and the jokes. You know, he's like the cruise line, you know, stand-up comedian guy, and I think it's hilarious. Especially because the Gorgonites, a lot of the time, are very, you know, very heavy and weighed down, and they don't have a lot of self-esteem, right? That's brought up in the movie.
Well, but their whole point is that they lose. That's right. Their entire existence. So yeah, I mean, I think that's fitting.
But then Insaniac's still able to crack jokes and laugh, and so I always really I like him. I think he's fun. Maybe not my favorite design necessarily, but I really like the personality.
You don't get to see a lot of his design because he's most of the time like a tornado of movement. But I thought, having the toy, you know, I inspect how cool the toy looked, and he was a neat design too. They were all the Gorgonites were just really well designed as well. I mean, just you could kind of tell their personality what it would be just looking at them, just like the Commando Elite. So yeah, I thought the all across the board. Wonderful, wonderful designs on the toys.
So, you know, over the course of the film, it kind of goes off the rails and gets really intense, more than I had ever remembered. When Alan and Christy are trying to, you know, run away on the moped, and the Commandos like blow up a tree and a power pole, like in burning flames, like flying down in the center of the road. It's at least for me, somehow that didn't make it silly. It just made it more intense.
It was, yeah. So that was where I started to get like, man, this is really freaking dark because, you know, so these toys are all shown to be sentient essentially and have their own personalities and, you know, alive, whatever, for, you know, as far as you want to take that. And they were getting like ripped apart limbs on the ground and like, you could see toy guts, essentially. I mean, if this was humans, it would be hard R.
Yeah.
And I mean, for all intents and purposes, they're just plastic humans. They all have their own personalities and they're all alive. And so when you start thinking about it in that context, and then they're trying to really kill. I mean, they're using like chainsaws and flaming tennis balls. I mean, as ridiculous as it sounds, you could make a straight up horror movie out of this without a whole ton of editing, really.
That's true.
I kind of want somebody to do that now.
There's not much difference between action and horror except for like a few cuts here and there.
And this one, I feel like it was pushing towards the horror in the last half for sure. I mean, when he was talking in that interview about, you know, that some of it slipped through, I feel like the last half, I mean, that kid getting shot with the freaking corn cob things in the leg.
Yeah.
I think we can all feel that. Like, that would suck really bad.
I mean, the dad gets shot with that nail gun in the backyard.
Yeah, I mean, that's messed up.
You know, it is really intense. And
then the full fucking climax fight where it's like a dude on a helicopter and a kid on a power pole, you know, like a lot of electricity. The electricity of a power pole could easily fry a kid. I mean, yeah. There's a lot of shit going on there.
Well, and when you think about, like, the Child's Play franchise, Chucky was so successful for so long and is still going on. I mean, yeah, I think you could have easily taken the characters in this movie and the general premise of this movie and make it a straight-up hard R horror film, no problem. Yeah.
Without a doubt. I do want to say something, mainly to Ryan, sorry, but I know he is a fan of My Hero Academia. Now, looking back, Insaniac definitely reminds me of Stain, like, a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. And yeah. I always wonder, well, now I'm wondering if Stain was kind of based off of Insaniac.
It wouldn't surprise me, honestly. That's a good point. I hadn't even thought about that.
So, one other kind of interesting out of movie thing is to what we were talking about, how, like, these are sentient beings, all of them, the Gorgonites and the Commandos are sentient beings. Mm-hmm. Well, they're essentially created. The guy who makes the chip, the scientist that they go talk to, is played by Robert Picardo, who plays the Doctor hologram on Star Trek Voyager. And
yes. He was doing it at the same time this movie was being filmed, I'm pretty sure.
Yes. No, yeah, he was.
I actually had to ask my girlfriend about that because I hadn't seen Voyager in so long, but I knew he was in Star Trek. So mm-hmm. We looked it up to see the timeline.
And it's really cool because that character, you know, no real spoilers or anything, but part of his character is getting people to realize that he is a being. He is a real living being that has thoughts and opinions and beliefs, and, you know, should have rights as a living being. That's a big part of that character's arc over the show. So it's interesting, and I'm sure very much on purpose, that was the role that he was put into here, where he essentially created that same program that makes all of these creatures sentient.
Mm-hmm.
So a fun little fact there. I like that.
So not to really, like, harp on this a ton, but I do want to point out just how awful the female representation in this film
it's
is.
It's really bad.
It's so bad, man.
I mean, the mom is the strongest of all the the hero's mom is the strongest of all the female characters. The other mom is, like,
she's awful.
Yeah, she's the worst.
But yeah, the Abernathy mom and Kirsten Dunst's character are pretty good. You know, they're not, definitely not bad. But the assistant, whose name is Ms. Kegel.
Who I know, we said that too. We said that too. Kegel? Really? Right? That's what they went with?
Who names her? Like, what is the matter with you?
Wow.
Have you ever spoken to a woman before? Or are you just like, we're going to name her after vagina muscles?
Hey, don't dudes have Kegels too? So
they do, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, look, don't get me wrong. That is the worst name in the movie, hands down. But most of the names are pretty bad.
Yeah. You know? Gil Mars is not a great name.
Right?
The most and cliche, like, names ever.
Phil Fimple? Like, come on.
Yeah.
Phil Fimple, Alan Abernathy, Irwin Wayfair is not bad. That's fine. But yeah, I mean, the names are not great, but that's certainly the worst.
Yes.
No question.
Yes, for sure. And then I also had a problem with the Gwendy dolls. And in a couple of spots, like, first and foremost,
they were creepy as fuck, I'll tell you that much.
Well, yeah, once they, like, ripped out their hair, their clothes, removed their chest, and
or their entire head.
Mm-hmm.
Like, one was just a pair of floating eyes.
Frightening. The things they were saying, though, it was all just ridiculous stuff. Like, and that's the problem with the 90s. Unfortunately, every toy for girls was made with like makeup or kitchen in mind, like dating and stuff like that. So all those lines were just really gut-wrenching. I was like, oh yeah, that's all they expected women to be.
And like, I completely agree with you. And I think what they were trying to do was like show that they weren't as intelligent as the commandos, because they all had to share one chip.
Yeah.
Right. But I don't know that that really comes across, especially to children, which is what this movie was really intended for.
And they're all in their underwear. Not one of them got to keep any of their outfits.
Speaking of that.
Yes, please.
My girlfriend brought this up to me, and I thought it was actually a really good point. She said, why are they all wearing camo underwear?
Right?
So there's two possibilities here. One is that for some reason the toy company decided that all these Gwendys needed camo underwear, even like prom dress Gwendy needed camo underwear. The other possibility is that the Commando Elite went through each and every one and painted camo shit on all the girls' underwear, which is really creepy.
Look, Chip is a very artistic guy. Okay, you just don't give him a chance.
Yeah, Bob Ross.
I actually think that is the answer there, because
the second one.
Yeah, as a girl who grew up with a ton of Barbies, their underwear never looks like that, especially
camo.
Especially when they were originally wearing like a Jackie O outfit.
Yeah. And then to your point, Ray, about like the female representation, when Christy starts fighting back, I thought she grabbed a golf club, but she doesn't. It's like a twirling baton.
Yeah.
You know, one of those plastic batons.
Like, you couldn't give her like a golf club or a bat or something like that.
Yeah, there's literally nothing else in this room that she could use as a weapon.
Like, at least Irene Abernathy gets the tennis racket. Right, which mm-hmm. is a neutral device, and she does a really good job with that. That's a really fun scene. I like that a lot.
You know? But they were shooting flaming tennis balls into this person. Oh my god, it's like, and then Wannabe right out of the freaking Spice Girls movie popping through. Wasn't it Wannabe?
Yeah,
it was one of the Spice Girls songs. Like, I started singing it immediately because I'm a closet Spice Girls fan, but. You know, it was something.
Well, now you're an open Spice Girls.
Now I'm open. I'm coming out as Spice Girls fan.
It was great, though. Like, I just love, like, she tells him to move the couch, but be careful with it. And then she just flips over the coffee table.
Yeah.
You know, and her husband's backing her up. You know, great forehand, you know. And I don't know. I like that.
Their marriage was fantastic.
Right?
They were very supportive. And for a kid who has been kicked out of two schools, they let him run a store, and they were both very calm dealing with his bullshit. Like, good for them. They were a really good couple, and I enjoyed seeing them again, especially as an adult now, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, so speaking of that.
Oh, go ahead.
When I was brought up earlier that my perspective is a lot different on a lot of things.
Yeah.
I'm closer in age now to the dad and the mom than I am to the kid. So.
Yeah.
When the kid is like, dad, I can do this. And the dad's, you know, the electrical pole scene, right?
Yeah.
The dad's like, no, I can't let you do this. And I'm like, right? You cannot let him do this. That's so stupid. He's like 10 years old or something. I don't know how kids work, but he's young.
He's 15. Yeah.
Okay, whatever. He's basically a baby. Right. You're not going to let a fetus climb an electrical pole to do battle with a helicopter toy, right? Like, I get it that he got shot with the nail gun, but I can't imagine any dad that I would say that's a good dad that would let their kid with like washing gloves on, because right. apparently rubber doesn't conduct electricity. I'm assuming that's what they're implying.
That's what they're implying.
I'm pretty sure
you'd
still die if you went up there with like rubber dishwashing gloves on. I mean, it was ridiculous.
It also doesn't help any, like that Phil doesn't help either. Right.
Yeah, sure.
And so you've got two capable adult males who do basically nothing. Like,
you feel that Phil Hartman's character was like just coming off of a bunch of downers. So I can't imagine that he was like in a position to really be doing much of anything.
He seemed fine by the climax fight.
But the mom didn't.
Yeah, but no. She didn't seem fine before she was
true.
Drunk.
She had right? problems.
Like, I feel like she was just really stressed out the entire time. Like, oh, her husband God. Is causing shit with the neighbors next door. He's putting up all these things, and he just, like, she just wants to watch some TV. So I feel yeah. like she takes a Xanax every 20 minutes anyway.
That's probably accurate.
But just, you have four adults, and Irene's really the only one who does anything risky herself.
Well, I feel like they were setting it up that Alan's dad would have done it if he hadn't gotten shot in the leg or whatever with the nail.
Yeah, they needed
it seemed to... like that was what was really keeping him from doing it, and I still think that's a little weak. Like, it would suck to get shot in the leg with a nail gun, but I'm pretty sure it doesn't stop you from being able to use your leg.
Well, I think it would have worked better if they had started with, like, the dad was going to do it, and then when he gets shot, then Alan decides to take over, and his dad can't stop him because he's injured.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would have played a little bit better.
Probably.
You know, but instead, yeah. Alan says, this is what I have to do, and the dad doesn't like it, but you never hear the dad say, I'll do it. That never happens. And then he gets hurt, and so Alan just does it, and so I think that's the assumption. I think you're right, but it's just not... It's not really there, you know?
Yeah.
It just made me feel really old. Realizing yeah. that I'm like, Dad, what are you doing? This is ridiculous.
Oh, the first time I had that with a TV show or movie was when I went back and watched Little Mermaid. And she's like, I'm 16. I'm not a child. I'm like,
yes,
oh,
you are.
You are.
Jesus. Yeah, you are. You're just like a baby.
That is hilarious. It's fair. Because like now you look at these movies, right? And as a kid, it's so frustrating because if the parents would just listen to the kids, everything would be okay. And now I'm like, well, what would happen if a kid came up to me and told me that like their action figures had started stabbing people? Like,
you would react just like the parents. You'd be like, go back to sleep, kid.
Right? Like it just, you know, but like most of those types of movies and TV shows, the plot all hinges on, like, if the parents would just trust their children. And now I'm like, I don't know that I would believe them either.
Well, so nowadays it's a little different. Some of these things could have easily been avoided with video. So if my 15-year-old kid came up to me and was like, my toys are stabbing things, they destroyed your shop, they took all your tools, Dad. Here, let me prove it to you. I'd be like, well, did you get it on video? Can I see your TikTok? Like, just show me that you have proof with this, and then we're all done, you know?
That's it.
So, at the tail end of the movie, Alan apologizes to the truck driver. I don't remember his name.
Joe. It's Joe. It's on his
cover. Right, it's on, yeah, it's Joe. He apologizes to Joe. And I get it, right? Joe got held up by Chip and everything. But here's the thing. If Alan hadn't talked Joe into dropping that case of figures off, then all 500,000 of these action figures would have been sold and activated at like around the same time all over the country.
Not only that, but all these people got massive checks.
Huge.
They're implied to be like way more than any of their houses or lives, probably for that matter, are worth, including the truck driver. Mm-hmm. So because that kid did all that, that truck driver's probably never going to have to work again. The parents are probably never going to have to work again. Like, it's implied that it's such a sum of money that these people will be set for life to keep their mouths shut. So, I mean, he should not be apologizing. That truck driver should be like, you know what, kid? You're the best. You right. really did something good here for me. You saved my life.
Well, and because like the scope of the movie focuses on just those two families, so it feels really small, like consequence wise. But it's not though, because if it doesn't happen this way, millions of people are impacted by this, and it's just ridiculous.
It would be like a literal like civil war in the country, you know, between toys and like humans, because I don't know if all the toys had access to everybody's shit for like a day before they realized what was going on.
Yep.
I mean, there's a lot of guns in America.
Right,
let's get
exactly.
real.
Right.
You know? And
it's only a matter of time before they figure out how to work those, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right. Well, we're coming up on our time. Is there anything else about the film that we should talk about, touch on?
The soundtrack was really good. Mm. You know, aside from the hilarious Spice Girls moment. It's just
that was the best part.
Great. It was so good. But there's also like classic rock in there. They had Led Zeppelin. Like the soundtrack was really spot on.
And it was a little weird when the girl was like, "Yeah, Led Zeppelin's my favorite band." It's like, come on, really?
Oh, man.
And then she's right. How old is the kid with the motorcycle?
Like, if she's 16, he's got to be 17.
Right. He's supposed to be a year older, I think, is the idea. And yeah, so it looks like we lost Ryan.
That's too bad.
If he can hear us, maybe he'll try reconnecting to the meeting
in the middle of his rant too.
I know. I'm sorry, Ryan.
It's so sad. But like, to piggyback off of that, then Alan says like the worst thing you could ever say to a woman, which is, "You're not like other girls." And she goes with it, like, "No, I'm really seven bats in a trench coat." Like,
yeah. No, that goes back to what you were saying earlier, because like, there, you know, she's being painted that way. She's got a million dolls, but she doesn't actually want them.
Right.
So why, her parents are just randomly buying her dolls that she doesn't have any interest in?
Yeah.
You know. So here's something kind of interesting that I'd like to touch on. It's the director. So the director is Joe Dante, who.
Did Gremlins.
Both Gremlins movies. Yeah, mm-hmm. he directed both Gremlins movies, as well as Twilight Zone, the movie, The Burbs, and just a lot of actually really interesting stuff, even as recently as an episode of Legends of Tomorrow.
I was just about to say that.
Yeah, so that's kind of cool. Like, it's interesting to see some of these connections, and we talk about how this could have been a horror film. Well, look at the first Gremlins versus the second Gremlins.
Yeah.
Right. You know, this movie, I think, tried to walk the line between the two, you know, and it easily could have gone one way or the other.
Definitely.
All right. Well, it looks like Ryan might be trying to reconnect. Ray, is there anything else about the movie? Do you want to give your final thoughts on the film?
I just want to say that, you know, whenever there's a bad movie, we tend to put most of the blame straight on the director. Well, I got to put like 95% of the credit to Joe Dante with this. He really knocked it out of the park. It's just absolutely a fantastic film that still holds up. So
absolutely.
It's totally his fault.
Ryan, you're back.
I am. Yeah, sorry. Apparently we had a power outage for a split second there.
It's all
anyway,
good.
What I was saying was, I don't know how much of it I got out before it shut down, but what about the kid that's like 22 years old with a motorcycle and she's like riding up? It was like a whole band of kids with brand new crotch rockets.
I think he's only like a year or two older.
Okay.
I think we're supposed to believe that they all go to high school together.
That's what we're supposed to believe, but I'm not buying it as an adult is what I'm saying. Okay. That kid looks like he's at least 25 years old.
Gotcha.
And then where'd he get all the money for that? Come on. I'm wondering. He's probably a drug dealer.
Or his parents got it for him.
I'm betting it's a drug dealer. That's my theory.
Okay. All right. So, Ryan, why don't you give your final thoughts on the film as we wrap up here? Ray provided hers. So.
Well, I missed most of Rachel's, but I think that it was good. I think that if they had had maybe a director with a little bit less, I don't know, maybe the same director even with less restrictions or more like freedom to do what they wanted to do with it, it probably would have been a little bit more solid and wouldn't have felt as like weird tonally separated between the really violent stuff and like the kids stuff. But overall, I think it was maybe didn't make as much money as it should have because it was a better movie than what the box office showed.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think it was the victim of bad timing releasing when it did with a lot of pretty successful films surrounding it. And I think it is an example of when the director is kind of told what to do later in a project from what they had in mind. I think this movie easily could have gone a couple of different ways and they tried to walk the line and that probably did hurt it because it wasn't sure what it was from that standpoint. But I think it really holds up. I enjoyed it far more than I really thought I was going to. I thought I'd look back on this and be like, man, this is so cheesy or something like that. But I loved it. It's really good. I'm probably going to pick up the Blu-ray now just because I want to have it. And the visuals hold up, like we said. It was really fun. I'm glad that we decided to talk about it.
Yeah, agreed. Definitely.
All right. Well, then that's going to be it for us this week. Next week, what are we doing next week?
We are watching Batman Begins.
For the 15th anniversary.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, the beginning of the Nolan trilogy. So that'll be cool. And yeah, so we'll be back for that. Don't forget, you can join us live on Tuesday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central on Facebook, facebook.com/groups/screenheroes. You can just find the Screen Heroes group and join us there. Please do. We do lots of non-podcast stuff in there. We've got different tournaments going. Right now, we're doing a Pixar film bracket tournament that Ray put together, and we're in the semifinals. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. The Elite Eight. Is that?
Yeah. The Elite.
Yeah. So that's where we're at right now. We're almost done with this.
Okay. The Elite Eight. We'll do lots more of these. So you can come join us and talk about, you know, movies and lots of fun stuff out there. Ryan, if people want to reach out to you or talk to you, how might they do so?
I'd rather they go to one of you guys, but I guess if they have to, at Buster Props on most platforms, even though it doesn't look like we've posted anything in months, we definitely haven't, but you can still reach us through there because I pay attention.
Nice. Okay.
Ray, what about you?
I am at Siren Ray.
And I'm at the Star Trek Dude. We are the Screen Heroes Podcast from the Heroes Podcast Network. You can find us at Screen Heroes Pod on Twitter or heroespodcast.com. The show is on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, you name it. If you can, drop us a review somewhere. Drop it on iTunes or Apple Podcasts. Drop it wherever. Let us know if you do, and we will give you a shout out on the show. And as long as it's appropriate, we will read your review on the show as well. So thank you very much for tuning in. We will catch you next time.
Woo!